Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about Ohio politics with a eminent panel. Karen Kassler, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau Chief. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Good morning.
And also Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News. Bill, glad to have you.
Well, thank you.
And Joe Hallett, Dispatch Chief Political Writer. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
I guess we could just kick off with the governor's race. Bill, you just mentioned that there's some birthday parties planned and a strange, I guess, coincidence.
Well, happy birthday, baby. I guess that's what they'll be saying all over Ohio tomorrow at 70 of these events. It's President Obama's birthday. He turns 49, but Ohio may be the only state where the governor's birthday is the same day as the president's. He turns 69, at least the way I calculated it. So there will be parties in Dayton, Columbus, Cleveland, and these will not be parties where they're, you know, popping balloons. They're going to be using the phone bank, canvassing for votes, and trying to get Governor Strickland out from under that limbo stick, you know, so he gets above 43% in some of these polls. So that's the Democrats are looking for things to celebrate. And, you know, who's against a birthday party?
Now, you said that it's not the only ones going on. They're going on across the country to celebrate
across
the president's
country.
Birthday.
Yeah, the president's birthday. I don't know how many there are. This is Organizing for America. This is the grassroots organization of the National Democratic Party. I think it came out of the Obama campaign. So they're using this as occasion to do phone banks, canvas, and you know, get the troops excited as we get close to Labor Day and the real kickoff of the fall campaign.
Right. It's something to celebrate, Joe.
Well, in many ways, this is a symbolic representation that Obama and Strickland are attached at the hip and have been ever since the president was elected. Even though Strickland supported Hillary in the campaign, he quickly moved over to Obama and was very strong for him. Obama will make his eighth trip back to Ohio a week from tomorrow, and Strickland will be with him again. The question is, does he hurt or help Governor Strickland? Because, as you know, Obama's popularity ratings aren't approval ratings aren't very high, including here in Ohio.
What's the dynamic when something like that happens, when it's not clear whether it would hurt or help? When there's a statewide candidate like Strickland not doing as well as you might be expected for an incumbent, and to have the president in, how do they? What's the equation there, Karen?
Well, I think in the U.S. Senate campaign with Lee Fisher and Rob Portman, Fisher's trying to answer that question himself a little bit and trying to get an idea of whether it would be a good thing to appear with the president or not. But, I mean, I think – you know, there's so much that's tied up with the Obama administration, the Strickland administration right now. I mean, you got Race to the Top, where Ohio placed in the finalists in that. And, you know, the governor has said that he is hoping to get more federal stimulus dollars because we've got this huge budget deficit ahead. So I think to not be there is just not an option for Strickland at this point.
I think that's exactly right. If he didn't show up, or if Governor Strickland said he had to go down to Duck Run and shoot ducks or something, the backlash would be terrific, because this happened to Lee Fisher. Karen mentioned that. There were two or three fundraisers in northern Ohio earlier this year, and Fisher was too darn busy to be there. He was out in California visiting relatives or doing something, and I forget what the other excuse was. And at one of the occasions when he couldn't be there, he was still in a primary against Jennifer Bruner for the Democratic Senate nomination, and she was able to make it to the Obama event. So when you stiff-arm the president, you get – that's a story in itself. And in fairness to Governor Strickland, he has embraced President Obama fully, as Joe said and as Karen did. He wants a Race to the Top money. He wants more federal stimulus money. He gave Obama a very warm reception when he was out at Children's Hospital here in Columbus not too long ago cutting a ribbon. So as Joe said, they're tied together for better or worse.
What the Rasmussen poll a few weeks ago showed John Kasich leading Ted Strickland by about 4 percentage points. It was just a slight decrease over previous polls, and it may be changed since then. A lot does at this time of the game. But I thought more interesting, as usual, was sort of the breakdown of that, and that Strickland holds a slight edge among women, Kasich among men, but voters not affiliated with either major political party favor the Republican by nearly 2-1 margin. Is that a big issue now, or should it change quickly by Labor Day?
Well, it's fluid and will remain that way, I think, through the race. We will see this race go down to the wire. I think of all the statewide races on the ballot, this will be the closest on Election Day. And at this point, I would hesitate to predict. But Strickland, his approval rating is down by dint of the fact that he has had to govern. And whenever you are in office, you have a bullseye on your back because you have to make difficult decisions, particularly in a climate of a recession. So it's not surprising that Strickland's approval rating is down. I still think people don't know much about John Kasich. Strickland has tried to define him early out of the gate as this creature of Wall Street with Wall Street values. There was some evidence that it was working because Kasich, even though for weeks they said that he wasn't being hurt by Strickland's commercials, he then aired his own commercial addressing head-on the whole Wall Street thing. So this one is going to be a Donnybrook, and it's going to be an ugly one too.
It's still not good news for Governor Strickland, though, that number that you cited, the 2-1. These are voters who are not, you know, tied closely to either party, and they're the voters who helped Governor Strickland score such a big win in 2006 against Ken Blackwell, and they're more fickle. And Ohio has suffered badly in the recession. It perhaps has not suffered as badly as some other states, and Governor Strickland has managed to get a balanced budget. But it's hard to run a campaign with the slogan, Ohio, not as bad as Illinois, or Ohio, not as sunk deeply into the swamp as California.
At least we had a state fair and Michigan didn't.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Which
this year.
It's very sad.
Who knows?
Yeah, right.
I mean.
You know, I guess I'm wondering about the jobs issue because that seems to be what's being bandied back and forth. No shock there. But the governor and his folks are saying, hey, this is the result of policies that were put in place before the Democrats took control in Washington, before the Democrats took control at the state level. And, of course, John Kasich and Rob Portman are saying, no, this is all the Democrats' fault. Almost 300,000 jobs down the chute since Ted Strickland took control. What plays with people now?
Well, I think Joe is right that the Wall Street thing seemed to have a little bit of traction, and that's why you saw the Republican Party then coming back and doing their own Ted Strickland has ties to Wall Street thing. They put out a little folder here that's got all sorts of details of how Ted Strickland took money from the financial industry, which includes, you know, Huntington Bank and Fifth Third and all these companies that maybe you don't necessarily here in Columbus think of as being Wall Street companies. But yeah, this jobs issue, I mean, the Republican Governors Association put the ads against Ted Strickland on before Kasich got on the air, mm-hmm. and really taking advantage of that idea of all these jobs are gone and Strickland has been in charge while all these jobs disappeared. You also had the Democrats, though, then come back a couple of, I guess it was last week, maybe the week before, slamming Mary Taylor, who is John Kasich's running mate, for giving advice to companies and individuals who were of higher net worth by saying, if you leave Ohio and you go to a place like Florida where there's no income tax, you'll do better off. And so the Democrats seized on that as saying, how many of these 400,000 jobs did Mary Taylor advise people to pack up and leave Ohio? So the jobs issue is going to be number one. It is going to continue to be the biggest one. And the question, I think, remains is, okay, what are you, Ted Strickland, you, John Kasich, going to do to stop this or bring back jobs? What specific policies are you going to do and what avenues are you going to take that haven't been done before that no other state is doing?
So the governor can go out and bandy about these the funding for, you know, that they have for jobs created by the stimulus package and that kind of a thing. But John Kasich, what's he saying, Joe? Anything?
Well, John Kasich is saying that Ohio's loss of 400,000 jobs during Ted Strickland's administration is Ted Strickland's fault. And polls belie that a bit. Quinnipiac polls of Ohioans show that they still blame George W. Bush for the recession more than they do Ted Strickland. But it's smart politics, for jobs is the number one issue. We've had a very high unemployment rate. It appears to be getting only marginally better. There's tremendous angst out there among the electorate about economic security issues and jobs. So it's what this campaign is going to be about, and it's why John Kasich is pointing the finger at Ted Strickland.
Timing is everything in politics. If Governor Strickland were on the ballot in 2012, jobs might not be as potent. He is not responsible for the national economic conditions that have lost these, that in which these jobs have been lost, but he's on the ballot. Voters are looking for somebody to strike out at, and he is a prime candidate. In Columbus, sometimes we get a little bit misled. We have kind of a cocoon. We have state government, Ohio State. Unemployment's an issue, but it's not like Dayton. I get brought to my senses once in a while when I talk to voters. I talked to a woman last week or the week before. She has two associate's degrees. She wants to go back to school to get in the medical field. She can't get a job. She says, look, NCR went to Georgia. All the GM plants have closed in Dayton. I voted for Strickland 4 years ago. I'm not voting for him now. And she also said, I think George Bush is a rotten apple. I think President Obama's a pretty nice guy, and I might vote for him. But Strickland's on the ballot this year. I'm not going to vote for him.
Well, that brings up another good question, is how much could it hurt the down ticket folks? Because obviously there's no, except for the U.S. Senate race, not a lot of up. How much could it hurt them if Strickland's doing poorly?
Well, I think when Strickland came into office, all the executive offices, Secretary of State, Auditor, Treasurer, and Attorney General, all went to the Democrats, except for Auditor, of course, mm-hmm. Mary Taylor. But, you know, that his win certainly helped those in the down ticket. So that's a really good question, is if he does lose, or if indeed it comes down really close and it's, you know, just by one point here or there, what is that going to do to the other races down the ballot? I think it's going to be both his race and the U.S. Senate race that are going to be – you're going to be able to see the ballot fall with both of them, because I think people – I'm not sure that people will necessarily make the choice Strickland-Fisher or Kasich-Portman. I think there might be some dividing here, and you might have one party win one party win the other. I don't know.
Because of those independent voters?
Well, yeah. And I think more than coattails, any kind of coattails from Strickland, the matter of incumbency will come into play more, and people are in anti-incumbent mood, and the only incumbents on the ballot this year statewide are Democrats, Richard Cordray in Attorney General's race and Kevin Boyce in the Treasurer's race. So they could pay the price for being incumbents, although I think both are going to be in tight races.
I think Fisher could possibly pay the price for being an incumbent, too, because Portman's now on the air attacking Fisher for being the job czar that didn't get the job done or whatever. And so there could be some anti-incumbency attack toward him, since Portman is currently not in public office right now.
But the governor, as you said, Ann, the governor is at the top of the ticket. And if you don't think that's important, ask Lee Fisher. And let's remember what happened to Lee Fisher in 1994, I think. He had squeaked in as Attorney General in 1990, and from all I can tell, I wasn't here then, he did a pretty decent job as Attorney General. The top of the ticket was Rob Birch. I believe Governor Voinovich scored the biggest victory in Ohio history or something like that.
Something and, like that.
Fisher got beat, and that ended his time in statewide office then. And Ohioans can be ticket splitters, as they were in 1988, when they went overwhelmingly for President Bush the first. Then they voted for Howard Metzenbaum for the U.S. Senate. The big difference in Howard Metzenbaum was a very strong personality. Lee Fisher doesn't have that imprint or that effect on Ohio voters.
And I think your instincts are right, Ann. The Democrats know that if Ted Strickland goes down in flames, the whole ticket's going to go down in flames. The Republicans know the same thing, because I get calls every day from Republicans, and they're not spinning about John Houston or other candidates on the ballot. They're dirtying up Ted Strickland because they want to make sure he doesn't come out of there with any sort of victory margin.
Well, that's why the Republican Governors Association got into this, and you've got the national parties that are getting into this because they see exactly what Joe's talking about.
You know, I want to talk a little bit later about some of after we come back from this break, about some of the clues that voters can get from those kinds of things. What does it mean when the Republican Governors Association comes out? But we'll have to talk about that when we return from our break. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
Teen violence appears to be spreading through Columbus streets. Mayor Michael Coleman is frustrated that young people are in the crossfire.
Far too many guns are being made available. We're a gun state.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:22 this morning. A slight chance of rain off and on throughout the day. Cloudy skies, a high of 91. A good chance of rain tonight, a low of 69.
Support for WOSU comes from Edible Columbus, a new magazine devoted to culinary traditions, seasonal cooking, and the local food movement in our community. More information on the summer edition can be found at ediblecolumbus.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're doing a little political primer preview, lots of P's, for voters out there on state government, the governor's race, U.S. Senate race coming up next, and there's some others we want to talk about. My guests, Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News, and Joe Hallett of the Columbus Dispatch. I wondered, what kind of clues can people get from what they see or don't see out there in the ad world? And mostly that's obviously television.
Well, you got to watch the end of the ad, you know, where it says at the very bottom, who paid for this ad? And that gives you an idea because, you know, sometimes it looks like it's, you know, the Democrat bashing the Republican or whatever. But when you look at the ad and you see that it's a national campaign committee of whatever party, that shows you how important that particular race is on the national scale. And we're going to see it here in Central Ohio, I think, with Kilroy Stivers. I think that race is a big deal to the national Democratic and national Republican parties. And so it gives you an idea when you see the Republican Governors Association putting ads out before either candidate is on the air slamming Ted Strickland, that gives you an idea of how important they feel that getting this governor's office for the Republican Party is.
They've had the Republican Governors Association, I believe, has had three ads already. They want Ohio in their camp for 2012 when they want to take the White House back. And for the Democrats, Ohio is a potential firewall. As beleaguered as Governor Strickland is, He is not in nearly as bad shape in Democrats in many other states, and they want to have Ohio. But I'm sort of conflicted when I think about this because I think about the 1990s. Governor Voinovich was one of the most popular governors in Ohio history. Mm-hmm. We had a Democratic president. Clinton was elected in 92 and 96 during Voinovich's term. It didn't seem to bother either one of them. The same in the 80s. Celeste was elected in 82 and 86 during the heyday of Ronald Reagan. So I understand the strategy and the tactics, but I don't think it always follows that if you have a Democratic governor, you're going to get a Democratic presidential vote in Ohio.
You know, it seems like the Republican Governors Association has done this before, and they're more familiar to this. What about the Democratic Governors Association? Do they get involved at this level as well?
Yeah, they will. They, to my knowledge, have not aired any ads.
Right.
They are feeding pretty generously, I think, the coordinated campaign of the Ohio Democratic Party with money. To a point Bill made, this campaign, this election, is actually the beginning of the 2012 election for president, and that is why we are seeing President Obama in Ohio so often. He turned in 2008. 9 states from red to blue. He could lose 8 of those states in 2012 and keep Ohio and still win. So he needs to be here. He needs a Democrat in the governor's office to help him hold on to the White House. That's why we're seeing him so much here.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and make a comment or post your question there. And Pat, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes. My son has a theory about John Kasich, and I wonder if your panel agrees at all. If you remember back in the year 2000, John Kasich seriously was considering running for the presidency, but at that time he wasn't a known name as much and as he maybe will be if he become. I think that his theory is if he can be a governor, and how many governors have gone on to run for the presidency, and if he is the governor of Ohio, that would be a stepping stone for him being on the presidential ticket. And I wonder if any of you agree with that.
A couple of problems with your son's theory. One is that he ran in 2000 when he probably was actually better known than he is now. He had just come off this vaunted balancing the budget.
Contract with America.
All this stuff. And he was a key player as chairman of the House Budget Committee. And he tried to parlay that into a short-lived presidential bid in 2000. The other thing is that his timing is very difficult. If he wins this year, it would be extremely hard for him to 2 years later start to run for president. He instantly would have to go into office and begin his campaign for president, which would not go over well with Ohioans. So if Barack Obama wins a second term, then John Kasich would have to win a second term as governor to run again in 2016 for president. So the timing is out of whack for him. Aside from that, he has told me, and I'm sure the others here, that he has no intention of ever running for president again. But then we've heard that before.
And he certainly is. I mean, the point of he's ambitious. Obviously, anybody who wants to run for governor or any high office has got some ambition there. And he certainly came out of the gate in the 90s as being very aggressive and ambitious and having some very high goals for himself. So, you know, you do wonder about all these folks that do put themselves out there and put themselves on the ballot, that where do they want to go? So, you know, I can see where you might come up with that theory.
There is an ad out there I've seen that makes light of his ambitions, including his aspirations for the presidency.
I think there is, and I think the Strickland campaign has to be careful not to cross a line in bashing ambition. Kasich has tried to use that against him. He said, well, what's wrong with achieving the American dream and wanting to strive? And they say what's wrong is if you do it the Wall Street way and just get greedy and step on top of other people. But Kasich is a striver. He has been all his life. And he's only 58 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think what Joe said is right. He dismisses aspirations to be president. But if you're the governor and people start coming to Ohio and say, by gosh, you'd make a pretty good presidential candidate. You only look like you're 40 years old anyway. I don't know that he'd slam the door on him.
Thank you.
Pat, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. If you have a question, give us a call, comment, give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So let's get back to that U.S. Senate campaign. Lee Fisher, he had to win a primary.
I don't think he wanted. I mean, I think we all know he didn't want to do that. That was it took his money. It took a lot of the attention that I think he was hoping to. I think he, you know, was looking forward to November. I think that he had thought that the campaign was really going to be now as opposed to back in the spring. And so now he's down. I mean, Portman has 8 times the money he does. Fisher now has to decide, when am I going to go on the air? What am I going to say about myself? You know, and now that Portman is on the air with the anti-Fisher campaign ads.
Right. 8 million to 1 million, basically. Was it hard for Strickland Lee Fisher to raise money during the primary to start stocking up for the November?
No, I don't think so. Lee has always been a money machine. He has always had the discipline to sit in an office and go through the drudgery of dialing for dollars. And I don't think that's changed about him. The problem is he had to spend upwards of, I think, $3 million in the primary to beat Jennifer Bruner. Whether he had to spend it or not, he did, which depleted his funds. And Rob Portman, on the other hand, did not have a primary, so there's this huge disadvantage. Things have not gone well for the Fisher campaign since the primary. Last week there was a headline in the Cincinnati Inquirer asked the question, is Lee Fisher's campaign in disarray? And that was prompted by the fact that his press secretary just left the campaign, mm-hmm. John Collins, and Lee is now on his third campaign manager. So
it seems a little close to the election for these things to
be
happening.
And I always wonder what came first, the chicken or the egg. Is it the disarray of the campaign that's making people say, I want to get out of here? You know, go with something
good. I think in Ohio sometimes we have kind of an Ohio-centric view of the political universe, and we should because, as Joe said, presidential candidates come here. They probably should pay income tax. But in the great national scheme of things, the Ohio Senate race is not as important as the Ohio governor's race. A Republican holds that office now. If Portman wins, a Republican will still hold that office. Democrats are scratching for their lives in Nevada. The Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, has a tough campaign.
Right.
Other incumbent Democrats around the country are struggling to hold on. It would be terrific for the Democrats if they could pick off a seat in Ohio, but I don't think Ohio is the number one priority for national Democrats in the Senate.
In and of itself, but had a candidate like Jennifer Bruner succeeded in the primary, a lot of folks said that her voters, her backers were more, enthused,
motivated.
more passionate. Had you had a group like that out there getting people to the polls, even though that's not the ultimate goal?
Well, they were passionate as heck, and how much money did she raise in the primary?
Enough to buy a bus, apparently.
And passion goes a long way. They were casting Jennifer Bruner as the second coming of Paul Wellstone, whose campaign in Minnesota was terrific. I don't know. She would have drawn more national attention and national support. Fisher hasn't.
Yeah, Jennifer would have presented a more interesting contrast with Rob Portman. I mean, let's face it, now you've got two middle-aged white guys running for the U.S. Senate who really aren't that far apart on many positions.
I think Fisher's campaign and Portman's campaign would disagree with you, but I think you make a very good point.
Right. Bruner, on the other hand, is she's a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. She wears it on her sleeve. She's not ashamed of it. She presents quite a contrast to Rob Portman, who's definitely right of center.
And I think Fisher's also trying to present himself as a pro-business candidate, and I think that's where you're getting
right.
to, Joe, with he's trying to reach out to that wing
of pro-business, pro-military.
Yeah, in the independent voters, and so that's a lot different than Jennifer Bruner would have been, I think, as a candidate for this office. So,
it was a big blow, I think, to Fisher when the FOP endorsed Portman because he wants to come across as a moderate. Pro-law and order, pro-business Democrat, and that's it's not hard to do, but I don't think it is helping him muster enthusiasm.
Especially since the FOP also endorsed Strickland. I think he was kind of expecting that maybe that would be the same for himself as well.
I think Fisher has to move pretty quickly to somehow repair this impression, and it's not something that's in the voters' minds, but eventually it'll seep in there if he doesn't repair it, that his campaign is a mess. We all know Lee Fisher. I think he is I will say this, I think in every office he has held, he's been a pretty good performer. He works really hard, but he is not an easy guy to work for. He burns through people with his 2 a.m. calls and emails and so forth. So I think that I haven't talked to Lee. I'm hoping to, but I think that's the reason why we're seeing people leave the campaign.
Well, and you also have reports coming out that he's canceling appearances. There was one in Claremont County where he was supposed to be, and he canceled right just an hour or so.
With no explanation.
Yeah. And when those kind of stories get out, it really doesn't make the campaign look good, especially when you've got, like Joe said, this simmering in the background, the idea that Lee Fisher might be a challenging person to work with. But at this level, I would think that anybody who's running for office would be challenging. I mean, look at the other paper story from last week or the week before about John Kasich being a little difficult. So,
And yet it's interesting how that story also, a little bit of an Escher drawing story, it gets you into, he's kind of can be grouchy and snap at people, snappish.
But do you want that?
Do we want a snappish governor? Do we want someone who's not afraid to let his color show when it comes to anger management?
But then you also have the other side of the argument that is it too much? Howard Dean self-exploded there, when he was showing too much passion and
John Kasich's never done that I know of.
Not on tape. I don't know.
Well, fairly or not, Fisher gets a rap for being too calculating. Not going to the Obama events, not showing up at Claremont County. There may always be good reasons for these things, and it may be unfair. I don't know. Is that something that he's had to live with?
One of the knocks on Lee, it's interesting because I have John Kasich has told me a number of times, almost the exact quote is, well, I'm not in charge of my campaign. I have people do that for me. I'm the candidate. My job is to be the candidate. I think the opposite is probably true with Lee Fisher. My guess is that he micromanages his campaign.
That's what I recollect from Lee Fisher.
With his spouse.
Right.
Yeah.
She's a strong spouse. And I think in 1998, when he ran for governor, we saw him potentially overthink a situation. At the end of the campaign, in the last week or 10 days, he had this bombshell against Bob Taft where he proposed a big income tax cut. Well, anybody who knew anything about Lee Fisher's past knew that that doesn't square with who he really is. And it came off as calculating and phony, and I think it actually hurt him, even though all of us want an income tax cut. But I think people just didn't believe it.
We have to take another break, but before we do, I want to read one email. Get one of those in. This is from a listener. Frankly, I am so alienated by both Democrats and Republicans in Ohio that the only thing I can do with the ballot is to write in no confidence. I don't see either party offering workable solutions to our problems because they're too preoccupied with squabbling over who's going to control the empty pork barrel. Either way, I get stuck with the tax bill and no job prospects to pay for it. That's the end of that quote, but I will say, on most ballots, you can't write in anything unless you get a write-in ballot, or unless you get a ballot sent to your home.
And I don't think it counts anyway, right?
They won't count it anyway. So, anyways, we got to take a break. We'll return in a few minutes. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and we'll hear about the Michigan pipeline rupture that's sending millions of gallons of oil into the Kalamazoo River. That discussion begins at 11 on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get a fresh perspective on the news with Capital City Radio, an HD radio service from WOSU. Start your day with The Takeaway and be a part of the American conversation. Or get a global perspective with PRI's The World. Enjoy a blend of old and new music with insightful news and talk programs. Listen to Capital City Radio on HD3 89.7 FM or online at capitalcityradio.org. Be sure to hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/All Sides. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning. A slight chance of rain throughout the day. Cloudy skies, a high of 91. Clouds tonight with a good chance of rain, a low of 69 degrees. A chance of showers and thunderstorms for Wednesday as well, and a high of 91. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests, Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News, Joe Hallett of the Columbus Dispatch, and Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. We're talking about politics. It's August, and just a hop, skip, and a jump away from Labor Day and kind of that traditional kickoff of the political season, even though it seems like it's a 24/7 deal these days. It really doesn't get started until Labor Day, apparently. So what else is on the platter out there?
Well, I don't know about that idea, but it doesn't get started till Labor Day. Now that we've got early voting, I think it's being pushed earlier and earlier and earlier,
right?
Because it used to be. Yeah, we didn't really see
it's
anything
traditional,
going on.
But
right. But now that you've got people voting at the end of September here, you know, you have to. And that's one thing I think, you know, until John Kasich hit the air, what, a year or a week and a half ago, there was a lot of question. What is he waiting on? I mean, you know, do you wait until people are actually voting? I mean, you wait until Labor Day, you go earlier. And so he's now out there. So that answers a little bit of that question. But and Strickland's not on the air, is he?
Well, he had an attack ad against John Kasich recently. Doug Kelly, the executive director of the Ohio Democratic Party, told me he expects that between 40% and 50% of Ohioans will vote early this year. Last time it was about 35%. 35%.
That's a lot.
So,
wow.
Karen's right.
And
you're going to see a lot of that.
What's the demographic of that? What are those voters going to tend to be? Do we have any sense about that? Early voters?
My sense is they're probably older voters, I would think, one who has some more time to do it.
And probably more partisan, too, because they've probably made up their mind now as opposed to waiting to make up their mind.
Okay. And we're seeing the campaign in hurry-up mode because the people who vote early – more so than people who go to the voting booth, take the time to peruse the ballot. They go from top to bottom, and they think about
it. No rush.
Right. So both parties are going to be hitting both parties have a good profile of who the early voters will be. They'll be hitting them with direct mail to make sure that they go down the ballot and support their candidates. So it's a campaign in a hurry-up mode.
We almost have two electorates, so I think that the people who – vote at the polls are like a former GM worker I talked to in Dayton. He was there when Kasich and Newt Gingrich came in. He was out there to show how some highfalutin, high-tech machine worked. And I said, well, who are you going to vote for? Are you going to vote for Kasich or Strickland? He says, I'll start thinking about it in September. He's not an early voter, obviously. But so these people who decide late are going to be different, as Joe said, from those who have been studying since January, and will cast their early ballots.
Those critical undecideds. We have another email from a listener. I've noticed that the actors in all of the anti-Strickland ads are older, at least 40-plus, if not older. Does this reflect the actual demographics for Ohio, or do you think the Republicans are really hoping that younger voters will not turn out in November?
Well, I've heard these ads are kind of made in bulk, that there's this ad, and then they just change the scripts, and then they go to another state, and there's another script. I haven't been able to find any of these other ads out there, but I've heard that this is not a ad that they specifically made for
these
Ohio.
These aren't real Ohio.
No, probably not. I don't know.
We don't know.
But I'm guessing that there wasn't an intent to cast each of those actors as this is a particular part of the Ohio electorate.
And I didn't notice that there – I guess, you know, the daughter – father-daughter thing. I assume it's father-daughter thing. She seems maybe in her 30s or late 20s, something like that.
Interesting question. I hadn't given it much thought, or I guess really hadn't paid much attention to the ages of the people in the RGA ads. I think the emailer is correct. I happen to think those ads are terrible. They just – I mean – I do know that they cut them all at the same time, all on the same day. There's either four or five of them. And every time I hear the walk-off, Ted Strickland doesn't get the jobs done. It just
grinds my... We can play that one. We can play it because I don't... Amy's got to find it, but we have that. And since you all brought up the ringing phone, maybe there must be other people out there that are screaming, answer the phone, and we can all do it together. You know, the ad, someone asked me the other day, why do they do that over and over and over and over again? And, of course, the reason is because it must be moving the numbers.
It's the same reason they use the same ad for soda pop or
toothpaste,
beer,
right,
or anything else. Toothpaste, you want to reinforce it. And if they find out people are buying more toothpaste, they'll keep using the ad.
And it's the same reason they do robocalls. We all complain about robocalls and say that nobody ever responds to them, but the parties still do them. And so it must pay off. They must be cheap to produce, and they must give the parties what they want. I mean, if otherwise, why in the world would they waste their time and money?
Okay. Do we have that? Ready to go. Irritating ad.
Ohio lost 400,000 jobs on his watch.
But Strickland said he'd cut state spending $366 million.
Good.
No, it seems he tried to pull a Strickland and got busted. Newspaper said it was accounting errors, gimmicks.
Pulled a Strickland.
Scammed the budget and didn't get the jobs done.
Okay, no
such
ringing phone.
Acting.
Yeah.
Read that card. Wow.
That sounds like me
I've
about 9 months
acting on reality, or heard better acting on reality shows. Holy cow.
But I think the one thing about that ad that sort of didn't make it with me, a lot of inside baseball in there in terms of the
detailed
budget. Yeah, and I find that unless there's money for their schools is cut or their child lost health care, people don't really pay that close attention to the state budget and the numbers within it.
They must not be, because if they were, wouldn't they be freaking out just about now?
They'd be marching.
No. Yeah, with torches and pitchforks.
Well, it's not just the people. It's the two candidates who aren't paying much attention to the impending $8 billion budget hole because they don't want to talk about it.
And the entire House of Representatives, it's all up for reelection. They're not talking about, I mean, they're meeting, but they're not talking about what they're going to do about it.
Someone said, that would not be helpful.
Your dead air intro couldn't have been more appropriate because these two candidates know what the options are to fill in that budget hole. There are tax increases or deep budget cuts or both, and they don't want to talk about that because Ohioans, frankly, don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
They don't want to decide. I get a lot of emails from folks saying, cut the budget, just do it. You know,
cut the budget, but don't cut what I want.
Right.
That's what I think a lot of people, you know, the budget just reaches into so many different areas that it's hard to just cut the budget. You know, you just lop off 20% or whatever and not really hit areas where people are going to be angry. They're going to see articles in the newspaper. They're going to hear about it on radio and see it on television, and they're going to get upset. But, you know, this is what they say they want. So it's really tough to talk about what do you want your government to do and how much are you willing to pay for that?
Because a lot of it is down to direct services. So you got the prisons, and of course you got Medicaid, but then beyond that, it's just people picking up the phones and answering the phones. If let's say you just delete funding for all of the Ohio Historical Society, I'm suggesting that, but or any agency you decide to just cut off, the state is also a big provider of jobs.
The state provides lots of jobs, but let's not forget schools.
Right.
Schools and Medicaid are the two big items in the state budget. And Governor Strickland says he's increased funding for schools, which technically I guess he's right if he counts all this federal money, but he has not increased state spending for school. Medicaid is a headache. How are you going to cut support for that? There would be some people marching on the state house if drastic cuts were made. And those are the big items. You could cut spending for all 58,000 or however many state employees there are, cut their wages in half, and it wouldn't
touch
make
it.
Here's a prediction. John Kasich says if he's elected, the one thing he has told us is that he's not going to raise taxes in the face of this budget crisis. That leaves him with one option. Mm-hmm. That's cuts. My prediction is his own caucus, his own Republican caucus in the House and the Senate, won't permit those cuts because 85% of the tax revenue that the state collects goes directly to local governments. 95% of the money that state government collects in taxes goes to about five areas: education, higher education, prisons, property tax relief, and Medicaid/human services. Mm-hmm. So when you start to talk about closing prisons or kicking kids to the curb or that sort of thing, pretty soon people start to talk to their state representatives and say, well, you can't do that. A delicious irony was in 2006 when Ken Blackwell was running for governor, and Bob Taft was the governor, and he closed the Lima prison, proposed closing it, and right. eventually did. The most conservative member of Ohio's congressional delegation, Jim Jordan, who represents Lima, stood on the picket line with Union guards to protest closing that prison.
The things they'll do.
I know. Well, and you hear it every now and then in House floor debate. Right. You know, cut the budget, but don't cut. You know, I'd like to increase funding for my program here in my district. You know, it allows people to be very territorial, and they want to serve their constituents. But then there's this larger budget issue that you've got to deal with.
So John Kasich, he could say, "Hey, I promoted these cuts. I submitted the cuts. The legislature wouldn't enact them, wouldn't pass them." But still, something has to happen.
Well, doesn't he have to sign the budget? I mean, at some
point, he has to put
his name on a piece of paper at some point that says this is the balanced budget if indeed he is elected. We're, of course, projecting that.
I don't know how this would turn out because I think Joe's right. There would be a backlash from the Republicans, but I'm not sure Kasich would care. He has said frequently, I'm not getting quite this right, the Republican Party is my vehicle, but I'm not a Republican first. I'm a crusader.
And he's also said he doesn't mind being a one-term
governor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think we will probably have a one-term governor no matter what happens, because obviously Strickland can't get reelected if he is indeed reelected this time because he's term limited. But I think Kasich, it's going to be a really, really tough 4 years if he is elected. So he may not get reelected if he is elected this time.
So the battleground for the budget won't be in the governor's race, but it's going to be in the legislature next year. What are they going to do?
Well, you said it, Joe.
I
they won't approve these massive cuts.
One scenario I have heard, and I don't know if it's true, is that the Republicans will hold on to the Ohio Senate if they win the House, and they have a decent chance of doing that. Though, in case Kasich is elected, they'll have an all Republican government. And one scenario presented to me is that Kasich and Bill Batchelder, who would become the House Speaker and who is also a very strong conservative, already have said, we got our plan, we're going to cut, and we're going to ram it through as quickly as we can to avoid as little, a prolonged fight.
Feedback.
Well, I've heard Senator Keith Faber has said that he thinks the state can cut its way out of this. So I just don't know how. I mean, I'm not good with numbers, which is why I'm in radio. But,
Senator Faber is
going to... Nobody wants me programming space shuttles or anything, all right?
Senator Faber is going to find, through this process, a whole bunch of his constituents demonstrating outside of his office.
And sure. Senator Faber wants lots of money for Grand Lake St. Mary's, which is a total mess. Ohio's biggest inland lake needs millions of dollars to be saved. Millions of dollars that the ODNR doesn't have right now, and they'll have less of that next year. So all spending is local. It's not just all politics. All spending is local in Ohio.
You know, you brought up the House's most conservative member, and it made me think of somebody who's passed now, Bob Netsley. Mr. I don't know, what he used to call him back in the day. He was in the House his entire career, wasn't he?
Or yeah. 40 years.
40 years.
He was called Mr. No. I've even heard him called Nutball Netsley.
But he always called you back.
He always called you back, and the Tea Party could learn something from Bob Netsley. He was a Tea Party long before the Tea Party, but he built bridges in his own way to liberal Democrats. Barbara Boyd, liberal Democrat from Cleveland Heights, I remember she's a pretty good-sized woman. She got up on the House floor to praise Netsley, and the first thing he said to her in his going away was, Barbara, you're a handful. Now, no other member of the legislature could have gotten away with that.
But he meant what he said. And he was consistent. He was true blue, and he didn't take it personally.
You and I covered Bob when we were at the Blade together, and we would talk about him often in endearing terms. I mean, because He wasn't phony. He lived what he believed, even to the point of when they held up the budget one year, I can't remember, I think it was when Gilligan was trying to pass the income tax, and as a symbolic gesture, Gilligan laid off all the state house grounds crews, so the grass started to grow, you know, knee high. Well, Bob Netsley got his riding lawnmower and mowed the lawn.
He brought a bunch of guys. Batchelder told me he was there cutting the grass too. Yeah. That was after Gilligan had closed the parks.
Yeah, he was this from the day of Bill Batchelder. I'm sure remembers him very well.
I talked to Gilligan about Nestle's death, and you know Nestle was against the income tax, but Gilligan said he was a straight ahead guy. You knew where he was coming from.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Kelly. Not yet though. So he's gone. You know, it makes me think about term limits a little bit. I get some kind of confused now because I've been away from the state house for about, I don't know, 10 or something years. But it seems like a lot of the same names are still there, thank goodness. But I'm always confusing. Are they in the Senate or the House? I get all confused.
Every time we have the turnover that's coming.
You're there. Are you having the same problem?
Representator? you always forget exactly which one are they in.
They just kind of chuckle.
Well, they... You know, for years, Randy Gardner and Bob Latta, who's now in Congress, just switched seats. You know, they were 8 years. So
from a Bollinger from Northwest Ohio.
Yeah, one would go to the Senate, and the other would take his seat in the House, and, you know, vice versa. And we see that in a number of districts.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the voters put him there, so...
Well, you've got family members now, Steve Driehaus and his sister Denise.
Yeah.
Tim Grendel replaced his wife up in Northeast Ohio. So, yeah, you've got family dynasties kind of building in a way.
And you get primaries sometimes because there are three House members for every Senate district. So not every member of the House can move over to the Senate. Maybe they'll expand the size of the Senate so they can all get Senate seats.
This email from Kelly, and we're going to have to end it here. It's she writes, I bet nobody suggests cutting state representative and Senate salaries.
Yeah, they have. Some of them, but will they pass?
But again,
it amounts to like $800,000 or just a drop in the bucket compared to $4 to $8 billion deficit.
You know. Want to say thanks to my guest, Joe Hallett of the Columbus Dispatch. Joe, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
As well, Bill Hershey from the Dayton Daily News. Glad you could be here.
Thank you.
And Karen Kassler, News Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau. Thank you for being with us.
And I needed to compliment you on your performance during the Doodah Parade.
Oh, thank you.
It was great to see you.
thank you. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.